to say all money.
Of the idea that a person cannot really warn himself, I believe would come from the mitzvah of Hocheach Tochiach, that is a mitzvah to rebuke. Well, in two situations. One is in a personal situation. If somebody insults you, that's because lo sisna sachicha bilbalecha, because you're not permitted to hate your fellow Jew. So if they do something that hurts you or insults you, something like that, so it's only natural that you're going to feel hatred. The Torah has to give you a practical way of dealing with it. So the practical way of dealing with it is that you're supposed to confront the individual and rebuke. Why did you do this to me? And hopefully you'll be able to resolve it, and once it's resolved, you won't hate. But then there's another situation of rebuke, which has nothing to do with anything personal. And that is, if you see a fellow Jew is not keeping the Torah, is being over averos, is committing sins, and so forth, just going in a general direction, in a bad direction, away from the Torah, so there's a mitzvah to be mochiach him, to rebuke him. Even though he's not hurting you in any way, even though you're not insulted, even though there's no issue of hating. Most people are not on the level where they can hate another person because the person is not keeping the Torah. Some people do have that reaction. I don't know if it really stems from such a high level of idealism. That's a different thing. A lot of religious people feel very insecure about the premises of their religion, so they need other people to keep it as well. Then they find that there are people that don't keep it, that don't take it seriously, so they take it personally. So there is a reaction of hating. That's not what we're talking about over here. It's a different thing. But here the Torah says that you do have a chiyuv to rebuke him. Now it would seem to me that by definition a person can only be rebuked by somebody else. For example, if you yourself are the subject, you're the one that's violating the Torah. You're the gavra, so to speak, who would be in need of a rebuke. So let's say somebody's coming to rebuke you. And you had to say, well, I just rebuked myself. You don't have to rebuke me. I think we'd all say it's absurd. But either you did tshuva, if you did tshuva, so then you don't need a rebuke. Fine. But if you didn't do tshuva, so then you need to be rebuked. It doesn't make any sense to say that the person rebuked himself. Because by definition, a rebuke would be something which comes from somebody else. That's what I wanted to say over here. So therefore, when we speak about a warning, hasra, we don't necessarily mean it in that sense. That aspect of the hasra, that is to say, that it has a certain effect when it comes from another individual. One person is a masri, and the other person, the other person is the object, the subject and an object. That's why the Rambam said, afilu. Even if you don't have that aspect, even if he warns himself. By warning himself, it seems to imply that the status of being warned, the essence over here is not that element of trying to deter, of deterring him. Don't do it. Because when a person warns himself, you can't have that aspect of don't do it. He's not talking to himself saying don't do it. That would seem to be absurd. So what does he say? What does he enunciate? He enunciates the fact that he knows that this is prohibited, that he knows it carries the death penalty. And really, that's the idea of hasra. It's to qualify that the individual acted with a state of mazid. That's what the halacha demands. In order to establish mazid, it has to be established through the mechanism of hasra. And that's yater atzmo. Because even when somebody else warns him, it's not valid unless he affirms and says, I know that, and in spite of that, I'm going to do it anyway. With full knowledge of the penalties, I'm going to do it. That defines him as being amazed. Okay, the phase of the testimony, of the edus. In a sense, the trial really hasn't begun yet. Because we don't even know if there's going to be a trial. Amru ha'edim ha'isalo hasra. If the edim said that he had hasra, they affirm that. Umakirin anu oso, and we recognize him. These are the two essentials in order to render it edus. Ma'aymin beis din aleihem. So So then Beis Din proceeds to intimidate them. As they've learned that there's a new requirement in Dinei Nefashos with regard to the Eidos. And that is, it's one of the procedures that have to be done in order to take greater measures to protect the life. Protecting the life of the accused, because it's Dinei Nefashos, lives are at stake. So, in order to deter the witnesses from being involved in a conspiracy, that's always a possibility. We have a whole masechet, Makos deals with the issue of Edom Zomimim, Edom who are conspiring to destroy someone. It doesn't have to be to kill, it could be conspire to cause them a loss of money too, through the judicial system, through the their testimony. So the Beis Din is aware of that, and it's a chiyuv upon Beis Din. Remember that the Dinei Nefashos is under the pasuk of v'shaftu eidav v'tzilu, that they have to do certain things to make it more difficult to convict, because here it's not simple conviction. Here the conviction is going to result in a loss of life. So with regard to the eidos, they must subject the eidim to a process of iyum, of intimidation. Now, the general objective of the intimidation is to scare them, so that if they are conspiring, they'll stop in their tracks, they'll become intimidated, and they'll pull out. Of course, you have to be careful, as we'll see, in the course of doing that, you might discourage true eidim. So that's the balance that has to be affected over here. Ketzed ma'amin. So now that we know there's a process of intimidation, so the Rambam says, how so? What do you do to satisfy that requirement? Al eidei nefashos. How do you intimidate witnesses in capital cases? Omer lehen, we say to them, Shema tomru me omed. Perhaps you're saying this from omed, from an estimation, circumstantial. That is to say, you didn't really witness it, but your testimony is based upon your estimate, evaluation of what happened. Umei shmua, or maybe you're just reporting what you heard. Eid mipi eid. Maybe this is because you can't have an aid UPA. That is to say that somebody witnessed it and they had to go away. They can't take off the time to go to court, so they testify, give a deposition to party two, and party two either goes to the court or he gives it to party three. Depositions, which is what you can have in the American system. You can't have depositions. The aide himself must be the one in front of the aide. In order to be qualified as an aide, he has to be giving testimony that he himself saw. So you can't transmit eidos. All right, we're going over these points in a general kind of a way. Obviously, as we go through the Gemara, we'll take them up in a more specific way, you know, in a more thorough way. I'm just giving you the generality, so you know. That's why this introduction is very important, because you're going to bump into it in the Gemara, iyum eidim, and you have to know what that is. That's why I thought it's important to begin this way, to get a basic overview of what's going on in Dinei Nefashos, how a trial is conducted, or at least the major phases of a trial. Then we'll go into the particulars. So I don't want to get too specific now, because we're going to be reviewing these things again. Okay? So it's interesting that the Rambam refers to this as Iyum. It would seem to be just a legitimate question. Even it would seem to me that this is something that the Beis Din has to do regardless. Why is it formed in the category of Iyum? Here is that the idea that you're not transmitting eidos from one party to another party does not seem to me an issue of intimidation. That's basic facts, information. Beis Din, we're not saying that every question that Beis Din asks in order to get the information falls under the heading of Iyum. That's not intimidation. That's the normal procedure that Beis Din has to know that this is legitimate testimony. So the Rambam, let's continue on the Rambam. We say to them, lest perhaps you heard this from others. Eid mipi'e, mipi adam neman, shamanu. Perhaps you heard it from someone who you trust. And that's why you're coming to court. Oshema ein atem yodim, shesofenu libdok eschem. Or perhaps you're not aware that we're going to interrogate you, that you're heading for an interrogation. Bedrisha v'chakira, with drisha v'chakira. That's the general translation, the interrogation, but it gets more specific. There's questions that are called drishos, and there are questions that are called chakiros. We're not taking that up right now. So far it seems to be pretty mild. This one I could see is perhaps a little bit of iyum. I'm not sure either. Because, again, we're informing you what the procedure is, that you're going to be subjected to a drishos chakiros. At a certain point in time, they're going to find it out anyways. So where's the intimidation? Even if you didn't have this, let's assume you didn't have this intimidation. So what would you do? You'd say, now we're going to proceed with Rishon HaKira. So they're going to know it anyway. They have to know that. We don't keep it a secret from them. Then they continue. Now it gets a little bit stronger. Have a Yodin Shalo Kedine Mamanus. Dinei nefashos. We tell them, you should know that dinei nefashos is not like dinei mamonos. Now we sort of give them a lecture as to the seriousness of what's going on. Dinei mamonos adam nosein mamono. And dinei mamonos, if a person's been wronged, that is, if witnesses come in and testify falsely, so it can be rectified. It's not that difficult. So you pay money, and it's carpalo. A person wrongs another one monetarily, so he pays, and he's forgiven. He gets an atonement. It's remediable. Dine nefashos, but in dine nefashos, damo, his own blood, the dam zarosav, and the blood of his children, tuluyin bo, atzof paolo. That is to say that if you're testifying falsely, and because of that this person is killed, so then you have blood on your hands. It's interesting, it's not just the blood of this individual, but the blood of his children, and all the generations down to the end of the time, so to speak. The aspect of frightening him, and telling him that the blood is on his shoulders, that makes sense with regard to this person. Now with regard to his children, and children's children, and so on and so forth, there, it's not that simple. For example, let's say the person is an old man and he's had his children already. Is this only in a case where we're talking about a person that still intends to have more children? And therefore you're responsible for killing him and the children as well, although with regard to the children there's no spilling of blood because there's no killing. Where's the killing? Rambam, what's the proof that this is so? Sharei l'Kayin Nemar. Because God said to Kayin, Kol Demei Ochicha Tzawakim. So this week's Edra. That when God confronted Kayin, he said the kol, the sound, the voice of the blood of your brother is crying out. But it says, it doesn't say Dam. Dam singular. It says Demei. In plural, damo v'dam zorosav, his own blood and the blood of his zera, all the children and children's children and so on and so forth that have been cut off. All right, that's the first point. Then we proceed. Lefichach nivra adam yichidi ba'olam. Therefore, Adam was created Yechidi Ba'olam. How did you learn that? Here is bringing down a medrash. Interesting that they utilized this medrash in the process of the Iyum, which addresses the question. There's a number of medrashim on this question as to why Adam was created Yechidi. Which seems to be that the issue is when God created the world, so it was all, in terms of the earth anyways, everything was for the sake of Adam. That was the highest being in the creation, was Adam, mankind. But obviously, it was the will of God that there shouldn't be just one person, that the earth should be inhabited and conquered and developed and so forth. And it's clear that societies, we don't know how many, it was you know, the objective was how many people, but the basic idea, there's billions of people in the world. And that the world should be populated, and all the different places in the world should be inhabited. That seems to be the objective. Now, the way it came about was it all traces back to one person. And that, you know, families developed over the course of time, and more people came into existence. Fine. Until it reached a point where, let's assume, the desired amount is achieved. But then one could ask the question, if that's the objective, if the objective is to have civilization and the world should be populated so that there should be many, many people, so why did God do it in this manner? It would seem that to be not the most efficient manner. So certainly God could have created many people. Either God could have created the amount that was desired, or I guess you have to consider that too many people would have been a problem. That you have to assume, because if there were too many people, and then the process of reproducing, you know, you could have overcrowding, so to speak. But whatever, I guess the idea would be that amount which would make most sense to achieve the objective quicker. Or why the idea of creating other mechidi? Interesting. It comes to teach us shekol ha'ma'abed nefesh achas, whoever destroys one soul, Malin Alav, we attribute it to him, Ki'ilu Ibeid Olam Malay. It's as though he destroyed the entire world. V'chol HaMakayim Nefesh Achas, and whoever saves a life, Malin Alav, Ki'ilu Kiyem Olam Malay. It's as though he saved the whole world. Simplistically speaking, the Iyam, the intimidation factor, would seem to be the gravity of the sin. Now, the gravity of the sin, how serious it should be taken. And therefore, it's saying that it's not just an issue of killing one person, but it has a greater significance than that. That seems to be the objective over here. And the reason why it goes into Kayin is, again, to make it more serious. Indeed, why do we go? Why do we take an idea, a lot of the ideas of the Chachamim and Midrashim, and they attach it to something in the Torah? They find a pasuk.
Did you think I was saying Kayin?
So that's to give it a greater reality. So you could convey this idea to a person on one level, just as an abstract idea. But very early, you see that people, when they speak to an audience, they have a very significant idea. If they can find, if they can think of some kind of a pasuk somewhere that fits this, it's more effective that way. It produces a greater effect on the audience, even if the idea makes sense. Because most people, it's true, if the idea makes sense, they may follow it, but the authority of the pasuk. So that's the reason for bringing Kayin. Interesting, though, the second part, though, would seem to be interesting. How is that Iyam? Because we're saying that, okay, whoever destroys a life, it's as though he destroyed the entire world. And then the other side of that, whoever saves a life, that part would seem to be superfluous. Is it just that once we're involved in that thought, we want to complete the thought? Or is that part of the Iyam? Let's say they forgot to say it. Do they have to say it again? Because that's part of the Iyam. Our concern is that these people are coming to destroy a life, so we have to inform them how serious that is. But to go on with that extra lesson, and if you save a life, that seems to be superfluous. Of course, you can say, all right, it's just a few words. Yeah, but, you know, the system is structured. It's very, very precise. So the question would be, how does that fit into the Iyum? Okay, now with the Rambam, Hare kol boi ha'olam b'tzuras adam harishon pain nivron. We see that all boy olam, all people that come into existence, all humans, are in the tzura, the form of adam harishon. They retain that form. The ein pnei echad mehen doma l'pnei chavero. Yet, the face of any one of them is not similar to the other. In other words, each one has a distinct look. So that's the basic idea. They're not identical. L'fichach, kol echad v'echad yochal lomar Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. Therefore, each and every person can say, because of me was the world created. All right, so needless to say, this, again, it doesn't seem to be part of the Iyum, and the idea itself is not very clear. What is being stated over here? What is the significance of this point, that everybody was created in the Surah in the image of Adam HaRishon, but each one has a separate look. Doesn't we look like him, but you don't look. You know, you have a distinct look. No two people are identical in terms of look.
More so.
To be explained. Because on the surface, it seems to be an arrogant type of thing. It seems to be a chutzpah thing. It seems to be egotistical. And there are many people that have that feeling. They may not admit it. But they act that way. Many people have an innate feeling that, that they're the center of the universe. That they are the most important. And everything exists for them. It's a feeling of superiority. Americans have that feeling. I was just explaining that that's part of the tremendous shock that people experienced at 9/11. Because they couldn't accept the fact that this could happen to us. Because we've reached such a level of power and security and superiority. Even though you see these things happening over the world, tragedies, but that's different. That's that. But we're protected because of the power, the wealth, the security, and who would dare to do this to us? So that was broken down. So it affected people. Even not just New Yorkers, I mean, the whole country was affected by that because of the arrogance, that the fact they were able to succeed and to topple, to bring those buildings toppling down. That shook up everybody's sense of superiority and security, their narcissism, which was based upon overestimation of the materialistic resources that we had. Americans do have that feeling of bishvili, feeling of superiority. It can't happen to us. Well, once it can't happen to me, why can't it happen to you? It happened to the other person. Yeah, because the world was not created bishvilo. Bishvili, and he quotes from the pasuk. But that's how people actually feel. But we wouldn't say that that's correct. We'd say that that's haughty. That's arrogant. All right, so we have to understand in what sense it's being utilized over here. It's not being utilized in that sense. Shema Tomru. Now, they seem to switch gears. Until now, they've been frightening them. Now they say Shema Tomru. Perhaps you will say Malanu Lutzarazu. What do we need this aggravation? Once you start hearing all these things, how serious the crime is, so then you might want to just pull away. That's what the concern is. So you want to warn a person, but you don't want to intimidate the person to the extent that he's not going to function at all, even if he's a legitimate aid. Shema Tom, if you say Malanu Lutzarazu, Harei Kfar Nemar, be aware that it says in the Pasuk, for who aid, O Ra, O Yada. The Pasuk is saying that if you are an aid, if you did see, or you know, it's all the same thing. If you observed it, so you have a chiyuv to testify. O Shema Tomru, or perhaps you'll say, Malanu V'lochov B'damo Shel Zeh. It's two different possibilities over here. Here they're saying, why do we want to be involved in causing him guilt? See, in the first case, they're just simply saying, what do we need this for? Maybe we're better off not being involved. The second case, they're saying, no, we're genuine Adam, we saw it, but if we testify, so we're going to cause this person to be found guilty and we're going to be responsible for him being killed. So maybe we're better off not doing it. Because now we've heard how serious taking a life is. So then we say to them, "Valo kfar nemar uvavod rishayim rina." And with the destruction of the wicked, there's rina, rejoicing, joy. So this is interesting because you see that Bezdin is operating on two different tracks. They sort of create the problem. In the course of the intimidation, they're creating the problem. But apparently it has to be that way. It doesn't seem to be that there's any other way to go about it. Now they've been so effective in their intimidation that the guy's going to walk, So then we have to reassure them that the two things, that first of all, if you are Edim, you have a Chiv, it seems to be a double reassurance. One is that if you are Edim, you have a Chiv. What's the other one? Is it superfluous? I mean, it seems to be repeating themselves. The Shema Tomer, there are two Shema Tomers. If you are Edim, you have a Chiv. And two, if you are concerned, if you're bothered, if you're troubled, because deep down, even though you're telling the truth, it bothers you. We can recognize this type of an emotion. I mean, there are people that know the testimony. They don't want to snitch. They don't want to snitch. They don't want to get somebody else in trouble, even though it's true. There are many people that have a strong emotion against being responsible for someone being killed, the death penalty. Even though they know it's true that the Torah says so, but emotionally they're not comfortable with it. They're in a state of conflict. So lest you be in a state of conflict, then you should not be in a state of conflict, because the truth of the matter is your emotion should be in line with the truth. And the truth is that if this person is indeed a Rasha, so the best thing is that he gets the death penalty. So that's Rina, you did the correct thing. That's to put their conscience at ease. Interesting. That fits into the idea of Eeyore. Although it could be, as we're saying, right now we're just simply explaining it, that it's a necessary consequence, because the way the Eeyore goes, first it tries to frighten you. So once it frightens you, you're in a state of fright, so now, what about the Vishavtu part? See, Vishavtu Eidu Vitzilu, there's a conflict between the two. It can't always operate that simply and that smoothly. That we can fine-tune the Eeyore to the point where it achieves the objective of deterring them, and at the same time, it does not overkill, so to speak. That's what you would ask. A smooth Eeyore should be one which achieves its objective. So why do you have to do this? You seem to be engaged in two different activities. On the one hand, you're frightening, beating them down, and then they're so beaten down that you have to pick them up again, otherwise you're not going to evade them. That's the question, so to speak. Well, that's what emerges. That's what we see happening, apparently. So one could ask, well, why maybe do it in a different way? Fine-tune the Eeyore, so that you don't have to then be in the business of picking them off the ground, so to speak. Okay. If they stay with their position. That is to say, after this intimidation, they do not withdraw. They maintain that they are Edom, that they witnessed the crime. Machnisin es agadol sheva Edom. We bring in the gadol. Here, gadol is not clear. The leader, or it's not clear in what sense one person would be the gadol of the Edom. But we'll have to find that. Now, the main point is you split them up. The interrogation is about to begin. You split them up. Ubokinoso bedrisha v'chakira. Kemoshi yisbayar behilchos eidos. And we interrogate him with the drisha v'chakira. Now what these questions are, that the Rambam goes into in Hilchos Eidos. So if you want to get a sense of what they are, you go to Hilchos Eidos. But right now, it's not that we don't have to know the particularities. We just need to know the procedure. So when they have the interrogation, it's one is separate from the other. Nimseis eduso michuvenes, if his testimony holds true, it's consistent, that is to say, they have not been able to catch him in a lie, or it could be that they can't answer certain questions. There are certain questions, if you don't know the answer to them, so that negates your testimony. Or they caught him in a contradiction. And there's different kinds of contradictions, but sometimes a contradiction will disqualify the Eidus, sometimes it won't. Now, if his Eidus is found to be firm, acceptable, machnisin es hasheni, then you bring in the second one, uvotkin oso karishon, and you interrogate him like you did the first one. V'afilu hayu ha'edim mea, and even if you had 100 witnesses, Botkin kol echad v'echad b'drisha v'chakira. Every one of them has to be interrogated. Nimsu divrei kol ha'edim mechuvanin. And if they're all found to be in line, because this is the reason for interrogating them separately. You're going to trip them up. If one witness contradicts the other witness in something which is significant, which would disqualify the aid, so that's it. And that could be even if it's one aid, one witness. All right? So if the words of all the Edim are in line, then he says, Poschin b'schus, kamo shebi'arnu. Then you begin with schus, on the side of merit. As we've explained, the Omrim lo, and we say to him, who is the person we're speaking to? Who do we say to?
The accused.
To the accused. Imlo chatasa, if you didn't sin, al tira medivrayim. Don't be afraid of their words. They're done in oso, and we judge him. Now, right now is the transition to phase two. Phase one is what? Phase one is the process of the edim, of edus, of drisha v'chakira, interrogation, which culminates in either rejection of the edus or kabbalas edus. The trial does not begin unless there's edus, and the edus can't be accepted unless Bezdin subjects the edim, in the case of Din Nefashos, to iyum and to drisha v'chakira, the entire procedure of drisha v'chakira, all the edim, and then they come to a conclusion as to whether we have edus. If there's no edus, then you throw it out. The Rambam doesn't specify this, but that's clear from everything he said. If there's no edus, they've been contradicted, you throw it out, and nobody gets hurt, so to speak. If we've been able to disprove the witnesses and to show that they're contradicting each other and that they're lying, whatever the case may be, that's not it. They face no penalty for that. The only time witnesses can face a penalty is if they are muzam, if you have edim zonman, another pair of witnesses that contradict them, but not contradicting them in terms of the facts themselves, but contradict them in terms of themselves. And they're saying that, how could you testify at that time and place you were with us in a different place, and you couldn't have been there. You couldn't have been there. That's is Adam Zoman, and then you give them the penalty that they sought to place on the accused. Anything else, any other contradiction, if you have two other witnesses and give a completely different story and say that the accused didn't do it, we were there and he didn't do it, different version of events, or anything which contradicts what they said, or we were there and there was no murder, you guys were seeing things, you're hallucinating, anything. And the second pair of witnesses would be subjected to drisha v'chakira. The same thing would take place. If they're disqualified in the drisha v'chakira, you throw them out and you remain with the first edus. The first edus stands. If there's the second edus of contradiction is valid, so now you have shnei edim, you have two pairs of witnesses, hamachishin zezeh, who contradict each other. In that situation, what's done in that situation? Everybody goes home. Because Bezdin doesn't know. Bezdin can only operate with edus, and as far as the edus is concerned, it's a suffix. I don't know. They're good edim. We haven't been able to disqualify them. So we have this story emerging from this edus. Now they're good edim, because we couldn't disqualify them. We have another story. Now these two stories contradict each other. So, we don't know which is true, we don't know which is false. How do we know? Because we can only establish on the basis of edus, and we have two legitimate sets of edim who contradict each other. Everybody goes home, including the defendant. Now, getting back to our situation, if the edus is accepted, which that means to say accepted, it's not up to the Bezdin, it just means Bezdin couldn't contradict them. The edus is mechuvenes. It's consistent, so then they have to accept it. Now they have to go into the second phase, which is called masa umatan, very important word, otherwise translated as deliberations. In masa umatan, you are no longer concerned, the dayanim, the judges now, you have 23, are no longer concerned with the issue of the facts. Did he do it or didn't he do it is not the issue that they're going to be debating it at this point in time. Whether they believe he did it or whether they don't believe he did it is completely irrelevant. That's been established. In a legal sense, the fact that there's edus, you have to assume that he did it. You can't question the edus. Now the only question is, given that that action was done, What is the halacha? What penalty does it? You have to now. It's a question of psak. The facts are the facts. It's like when you come to you have a shiloh. You go to a rav with a shiloh. So he gets the facts from you. Now, once he gets the facts from you, he's going to go through all the halacha to try and make a decision as to what the halacha is. But he's not questioning the facts anymore. I'm not interested. Maybe you made up the whole story. It doesn't matter. Given that these are the facts, what's the halacha? That's what they deliberate about. And the deliberation revolves around two positions. There's zchus and chov. Those are very important terms. And someone who is malame zchus, someone who offers an opinion. Malame zchus means it's limud, of course, but it's a decision or it's an opinion. Let's use the term opinion. A opinion for acquittal is a malame zchus. An opinion of conviction is a malame chov. That's the second phase now. It's masa umatan. And the Mishnah, we'll learn in the Mishnah that poskim, there's a whole issue of poskim, of course. The Rambam gave us many different opinions in the Gemara. The Rambam gave us psak as to what consists of poskim, of course. It means to say that you have to begin with on the side of merit. And the way the Rambam learns, that's when you reassure the person not to worry. That if he didn't do it, then he shouldn't be afraid. Now, what happens in matzu lo zchus, potrin oso? If they found zchus, so then they acquit him. V'im lo matzu lo zchus, and if they didn't find zchus, osrin oso ad lamacha. As you will see in the Mishnah, the trial can begin and conclude on the same day, only in one situation, if there is schus, acquittal, for acquittal. See, the requirements for acquittal are different than the requirements for conviction. As you learn in the Mishnah, in order to achieve acquittal, you just need a simple majority. Kabezin operates by majority rule. You don't have to have all 23 in any case. So a simple majority would be sufficient to acquit. So if you have a simple majority, so then you acquit him on that day. If you have a majority of two for conviction, for conviction requires a majority of two. Simple majority is not enough because the tzilu. So you make the requirements more exacting. So let's say at the end of day one you have the required majority for conviction. So then you can't convict them. And what you must do is it's called halonas adin. You have to do overnight. The din has to be allowed to convict. In order to convict, you need to have at least a day, and then the overnight, and then the next day. 2 days. 2 days of trial. So that's what he's saying. Im lo matzu lo zchus, if they didn't find the zchus, osrin oso ad lamachar. They hold him, they incarcerate him, until the next day. I'm sorry? Biyom, and that day, the remaining of the day, Mizdavgin HaSanhedrin Zugos Zugos. What does that mean? Chavruses. Zivug. That's the term that's used for a shidduch, a zivug. Couple. Zugos Zugos. I mean, generally it's a couple. It's two. It's chavruses. La'ayim Bedino. To study, think deeply. Umematin B'machol. And they don't get involved in achila, just the minimal, just I guess what you need. Because you have to devote all of your energies towards thinking about this. It's very serious. To give every last opportunity, maybe you missed the point. But it has to be legitimate, obviously. You can't just go by your emotions over here. But yeah, you have to be malami. It has to be a serious, valid opinion. The ain shosin yayin koloso hayam. And they don't drink wine that day. V'nosin v'nosin v'dava kalalayla. And they continue to deliberate throughout the night. Kol echad v'yechad im zug shelo. Olamatz no beveso. However you want. In other words, basically you got to stay up all night learning about this case. Because the more you learn, the more, you know, you see that but these are experts and they know the law. This is not like civil law. This is Torah. And it's infinite. And sometimes a person can come along with a new principle, a new way of understanding something, and change all the factors. That's how abstract it is. The next morning they get up and come to Bezdin. Hamazaka Omer Ani Hamazaka. Umazaka Ani Bimkomi. The one who was Mazaka, he's the Malame Schus is called Mazaka, Schus, says that I am a Mazaka and I continue to be Mazaka. Vamachayev Omer Ani Machayev Bimkomi. And the Machayev has the opportunity to change. The implication over here is that the Mazaka, as you will learn, can't change. Once he was Malamed Schus, he can't change his position to be Malamed Chov. However, whether that's only in the case of the Masu Matan, but he can change in the Gemar Din, or whether he can't change at all, we'll take that up. I'm just giving you the generality. But the Mechayev, if somebody was a Mechayev, he could either say, I'm still a Mechayev, or he say, I changed my opinion. I've changed my opinion to Schus. Oh, Chazarti Vani Mazaka. Or I've changed my mind and I'm a Mazaka. Vim Tov B'davar V'lo Yadu Mihem Shechayvu Oziku Mitam Echad She'enon Nechshavin Ela B'Echad Kemo She'Biyarnu. Alright, the Rambam is referring back now. These are more, we're getting into more of the particulars, which he's already referred to. We're going to be taking them up. That is to say, when are they counted in terms of the count? When are two people counted as one, and when are they counted as two separate votes? Because they're basically saying the same thing. It's basically the same reason. Hare sofrei hadayan and maskirin osan. The scribes, they would appoint scribes and they would write down each person's opinion. So here, if they don't remember or there was a little confusion as to what they said yesterday, the scribes will remind them. Sharei hein kosvin tam shal kol echad b'yechad. Because they write the reasons of each particular person. U'maschilin bedino. Then they begin to judge him. Immotzu lo schus patru. If they're able to find a schus, so they acquit him. V'im hutzrichu lahosif mosifin. And if they have to add, now that's another issue. Well, under what circumstances do they add dayanim? They can add dayanim to the court. They add ravu hamachayvin. If the convictors are in the majority, v'nischayev, and he was then found guilty, that's the gemar din. There are three phases that we've discussed. There's the phase of Eidus, Vish Chakira, etc., leading up to either rejection or acceptance of Eidus. That's phase one. If the Eidus is accepted, it's the Machayev of the Sanhedrin to engage in Masu Matan. Masu Matan is phase two. Now Masu Matan comes to a conclusion with Gemar Din. Gemar Din is the final vote. As we saw, for acquittal, all you need is a simple majority, and you can do it on the same day. For conviction, you need a majority of two, and overnight. But then you have Gemar Din, is when they conclude, and they say to the individual, Ploni ben Ploni, either you're Chayev, or Ploni ben Ploni is innocent, and that's the conclusion. Now, if he's found Zakai, he's found Putter, so that's it. He goes home, can't bring him back, even if he discovered you made a mistake. Cannot bring him back. If he's found guilty, motzien oso lahargo, then he has to be executed, and he has to be executed immediately. Umakom shehargin bo besdin, and the killing place, the place where they execute, yia chutz lebesdin, should be outside of besdin, v'rochak mebesdin, and distant, a little bit of a distance away, shenemar hotzei samakar lo michutz lamachna. V'roli sheyia rochak kmo shisha milan. Alright, so he gives the distance. It's not that great of a distance. He says 6 milen. Sounds like 6 miles. But I don't know if he's going into, according to our measurements. But the basic objective is that it shouldn't appear. It's part of this whole idea that people shouldn't think that the objective of the court is to kill people. It shouldn't be associated with death, with killing. Okay, hold it a second here. All right, after I conclude the rest of the for Perek, that's Halacha Daled now. Misha Nigmar Dino, someone who received a verdict of guilty. Ein Mashin Oso, you cannot delay. You can't delay. For example, like you have in America, the phenomenon of death row, appeals, and generally it's years. Even when people that get the death penalty, I think the average is about 10 years waiting, something like that. That's inconceivable in terms of Sanhedrin. You're not even allowed to delay one day. It's considered to be a serious violation. You're inflicting tremendous pain upon the person. It's called Inui Hadin, affliction of the din, because he sits around thinking, he's just anticipating when he's going to be killed. Afilu Haisa Ubra Ein Mamtinin La Achetelet. Even if it was a woman who was found guilty, women are also subject to the death penalty, and she was pregnant, we don't wait until she gives birth. Umakin Osa Keneged Beis Haheryon Achayamas Avla Tchila. So first you see to it that the fetus is killed. Avalam Yashva La Mishbar Mamtin La Achetelet. But if she already was sitting on the birthing place, so to speak, she's in the process of giving birth, then we wait. V'chol isha she tehoreg muter lehonas pesara. Alright, I'm not going into these particularities. Misha yotze lehoreg v'yezivcho zavach ein hergen oso ache mazin olav midam chatzasa v'yashama. Alright, that's with regard to another factor. A person was being brought out to be executed, and at the same time he had already initiated a karban. And it's not. Alright, the main point over here in the list of halachas is this principle. The Mishnah will take it up as well, and that's called Inui Hadin. That you're not permitted to subject the person to the affliction of the din. And it sounds strange. I mean, in the sense it goes against the emotions. But that's considered to be the Achkarech Kmocha. You're not allowed to put him in that position. And the truth is, objectively speaking, that the best thing for him is to be executed. And if he's not executed, so then every minute is torture, is a torment, because he's anticipating the execution. So that's the anticipation, per se, you can't prevent, that's the reality. But to prolong it unnecessarily is considered to be affliction. Okay? The question is, that isn't it more painful to kill the fetus? Well, why do we kill the fetus first, and then you kill her? So the answer that's being suggested makes sense. It's subject to further investigation, but at this point it makes sense that if you just killed her and didn't kill the fetus, so then what would you do? Well, she's dead, but the fetus within her would still be alive for a certain amount of time. So you wouldn't be allowed to kill the fetus then, because there's no reason. It's just murder. You don't want to do that. And to simply kill her and just let the fetus die naturally, the question can be raised that it's a tzar bali chayim, it's inhumane. So therefore, you can kill the fetus because that's part of the process of killing her, since the fetus is part of her. So in that that's part of the process of killing her. As part of the process of killing her, you can kill the fetus.
Wouldn't the parents be part of her either way?
What? We're under investigation, but at this point in time, it makes sense.